From NPR News, this is a special report. I'm Linda Wertheimer. President Obama brought together Democratic and Republican members of Congress today for a marathon discussion on health care. House and Senate leaders from both parties, plus the chairman and ranking members of relevant committees, and members with some special expertise, spent most of the day in the Garden Room at Blair House, a stately brick mansion on Lafayette Square, across from the White House. It's often used as a guest house for visiting heads of state, and it has served as the president's residence on occasion when parts of the White House were being repaired. Mr. Obama sat at a table in the shape of a hollow square to moderate what was at times a discussion and at times a reprise of what the president characterized as talking points. President Obama led off with a short speech.
Thank you so much for participating today. I am very grateful to all of you because I know how busy you are. What I want to do is just make a few brief remarks on the front end, and then we're going to allow leadership from both the House and the Senate to make some opening remarks, and then we will dive in. Last year, obviously, was one of the toughest years we've had on record, and all of us, in one way or another, were devoted to focusing on breaking the back of the recession, restoring economic growth, putting people back to work. We've still got a long way to go. And so I know both the House and the Senate are interested in how do we propel economic growth forward, how do we create more jobs. I was very pleased to see a glimpse of bipartisanship in the Senate recently in passing a jobs bill, and I hope that continues, and I know there are going to be some additional pieces of legislation moving forward around, for example, making sure that small businesses can get financing. And those are the kinds of things that I think all parties and both chambers should be able to agree to. So I'm very much looking forward to working with you on all those issues. I have said repeatedly, I said at the State of the Union, I said last night when I was meeting with the Business Roundtable, that in addition to dealing with the immediate challenges we face in the recovery, it's absolutely critical that we also look at some fundamental structural problems in our economy that are hurting families, hurting businesses, and having an impact on the exploding deficits and debts that the federal government, but also state governments, are carrying. And it's for that reason that last year, around this time, actually, I hosted in the White House a healthcare summit and indicated to Congress that it was absolutely critical for us to begin now moving on what is one of the biggest drags on our economy and represents one of the biggest hardships that families face.
The president said health care needs to be overhauled, not just for those who have no insurance, but for those who do have it. Premiums, he predicted, will double in the next 10 years. More businesses will have to drop health care coverage for their employees, and health care costs will continue to drive the federal deficit. Here's the president again.
Here's the bottom line. We all know this is urgent. And unfortunately, over the course of the year, despite all the hearings that took place and all the negotiations that took place and people on both sides of the aisle worked long and hard on this issue, and this became a very ideological battle. It became a very partisan battle, and politics, I think, ended up trumping practical common sense. I said to the State of the Union, and I'll repeat, I didn't take this on because I thought it was good politics. This is such a complicated issue that it's inevitably going to be contentious. But what I'm hoping to accomplish today is for everybody to focus not just on where we differ, but focus on where we agree. Because there actually is some significant agreement on a host of issues.
President Obama's conciliatory opening statement, invoking a recent glimpse of bipartisanship, as he said, from the Congress, brought a similar response, at least in tone, from Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, a Republican with a reputation for moderation.
Mr. President, thank you very much for the invitation. Absolutely. Appreciate being here. Several of us were a part of the summits that you had a year ago, and so I've been asked to try to express what Republicans believe about where we've gotten since then. As a former governor, I also want to try to represent governors' views. They have a big stake in it. I know you met with some governors just the last few days. And we believe that our views represent the views of a great number of the American people who have tried to say in every way they know how, through town meetings, through surveys, through elections in Virginia, New Jersey, and Massachusetts, that they oppose the health care bill that passed the Senate on Christmas Eve. And more importantly, we want to talk about, we believe we have a better idea. And that's to take many of the examples that you just mentioned about health care costs, make that our goal, reducing health care costs, and start over. And let's go step by step toward that goal.
That last point, going step by step, was repeated by a number of Republicans throughout the day. Some health care overhaul is needed, they said, but not the comprehensive approach taken in the bill passed late last year by the Senate. Instead, the Congress should start over. Here's Senator Alexander again.
When I went home for Christmas, after we had that 25 days of consecutive debate and voted on Christmas Eve on health care, a friend of mine from Tullahoma, Tennessee, said, "I hope you'll kill that health care bill." And then before the words were out of his mouth, he said, "But we've got to do something about health care costs. My wife has breast cancer. She got it 11 years ago. Our insurance is $2,000 a month. We couldn't afford it if our employer weren't helping us do that. So we've got to do something." And that's where we are. But we think to do that, we have to start by taking the current bill and putting it on the shelf and starting from a clean sheet of paper.
Senator Alexander had one more proposal, reflecting what is clearly a Republican concern about today's meeting, that it was an effort to show the Democrats trying hard for consensus, that if Republicans don't cooperate, Democrats will go ahead without them.
Now, in conclusion, I have a suggestion and a request for how to make this a bipartisan and truly productive session. And I hope that those who are here will agree. I've got a pretty good record of working across party lines and of supporting the president when I believe he's right, even though other members of my party might not on that occasion. And my request is this, is before we go further today, that the Democratic congressional leaders and you, Mr. President, renounce this idea of going back to the Congress and jamming through on a partisan vote through a little used process we call reconciliation, your version of the bill. You can say that this process has been used before, and that would be right, but it's never been used for anything like this. It's not appropriate to use to write the rules for 17% of the economy. Senator Byrd, who is the constitutional historian of the Senate, has said that it would be an outrage to run the health care bill through the Senate like a freight train with this process.
Here in the studio today, I'm joined by NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley, senior Washington editor Ron Elving, and health policy correspondent Julie Rovner. Welcome to all of you.
Good to
Hi.
Be here. Thank you.
Julie, I'm going to start with that big word, reconciliation, and ask you to explain what the process is that that Senator Alexander seemed to be concerned about.
Well, it has become sort of all the rage recently. It's actually the last piece of the federal budget process. After the House and the Senate pass a budget resolution, they can do what's called instructions to what it is. It reconciles the instructions in the budget resolution with mandatory programs. They do part of the budget every year through annual appropriations, but those appropriations don't touch programs that just go from year to year, like Medicare and Medicaid, big programs. And it would also be other mandatory spending like taxes. So if you have a tax bill or you want to change Medicare, Medicaid, welfare, anything that's mandatory spending, you would do a budget reconciliation bill. Because these are deemed important bills, they have special rules, particularly in the Senate. You cannot filibuster them, and so they can be passed with just 51 votes instead of 60. So it's very attractive to use budget reconciliation. And in fact, even though Senator Alexander said it's little used, it's not that little used. It's been used 21 times since 1980 for any manner of tax bills. Welfare reform was done in a budget reconciliation. In fact, most major health bills have been done using budget reconciliation since 1980. So it wouldn't be, yes, there's never been a bill of this magnitude done using reconciliation, but there's never been a bill of this magnitude done.
I see. Scott Horsley, let me ask you about something else that I think we ought to make clear, and that is this discussion is sort of predicated upon the Obama version of health care. Now, what he put his own proposal on public view earlier this week, it takes things from the House and things from the Senate. It looks to me like what might have been produced had the House version and the Senate version had what they traditionally do, a conference, and reached some sort of compromise. What can you tell us about the president's decision to put his own bill out there?
Well, it's sort of remarkable. And I mean, here we are a year into this health care debate. And finally, for the very first time, we've actually had the president put his stamps, come out and say, this is what I want. Up until now, he's weighed in on some of the controversies, some of the provisions of the bill, often rather vaguely, though, and said, well, I could go either way. But finally, he did come out and say, look, I've taken the Senate bill as a starting point, and I've made some tweaks in it to try to maintain support from Democrats in the House in particular. And I've added some pieces of my own, like a federal panel to regulate insurance premiums. But we now finally, at this late date, have an actual Obama health care proposal.
The president was very much in charge of what was going on in this discussion, I thought, Ron. And I think it was sort of reminded us all that if you have the president sitting at the table, that he is a heavyweight guy.
It was his meeting. It was conducted much as though he were the chairman of a committee, and the committee was doing a markup on a bill. Now, of course, it sounded a lot like the opening statements before they got down to actually marking up the bill. But he was at least the chairman. He was the man in charge. Everyone had to address him as Mr. President. He could call them all by their first names.
Julie Rovner, our health policy correspondent. Scott Horsley, who is our White House correspondent, of course, our senior Washington editor, Ron Elving, you just heard from. Thank you all very much. We'll be back in just a moment. You are listening to a special report from NPR News. From NPR News, a special report, I'm Linda Wertheimer. In Washington today, President Obama hosted Democratic and Republican members of Congress at a day-long conversation on health care. The president divided the discussion into four topics: controlling medical costs, insurance reform, deficit reduction, and expanding health coverage. In the president's plan, almost all Americans would have health insurance. Participants mostly, but not entirely, stuck to the agenda. The discussion began with controlling medical costs. Republican Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, a physician, spoke for his party. He said that one out of every $3 spent on health care does not actually help patients, and that's where he wanted to focus attention.
What I would hope we would do is that we would go back and concentrate on the areas that have the biggest pot of gold for us. And the biggest pot of gold is we don't incentivize prevention. We don't pay rewards for a great management of chronic disease. We have a system throughout the country where we're encouraging lawsuits that aren't productive for the country, and what they actually do is cause the cost of health care to go through the roof. We also know there's some other real things that we ought to address. There are conflicts of interest within the medical field. There's nothing wrong with addressing those and taking those off. We know that we absolutely do not incentivize prevention. And I'm not talking about creating walking paths. I'm talking about paying people who actually do a good job to do prevention. Talking about changing the school lunch programs where it meets the needs, nutritional needs of Americans. Changing the food stamp program where it incentivizes people to eat the right things, not the wrong things. We actually create more diabetes through the food stamp program and the school lunch program than probably any other thing, because we're not offering and incentivizing a great response.
Senator Coburn also echoed what Republican leaders said and said several times during the course of this discussion, that they would like to see the Congress start over with health care. But the House Majority Leader, Steny Hoyer of Maryland, saw some overlap between what Republican Coburn wanted to do and what the Democrats want to do.
Senator Coburn, we certainly agree with you that $1 in $3 is not being spent as effectively as it should be. And we have a lot of provisions in both bills, as you well know, that try to get us to a place where administrative costs, health information technology, so many other things are done to wring the costs out. And in addition, you speak eloquently and correctly about wringing fraud, waste, and abuse out of this system. I know you're happy to have seen in our bill, in the House bill and in the Senate bill, very substantial investment in doing just what you suggest. So I think we have agreement on conflict of interest in delivery of medicine as well. We've dealt that with that in our bill. We've dealt with it previously, as you well know. We've put incentives for prevention in here, which you mentioned. We absolutely agree on that. We think this bill does that. Now, you may have a better way of doing it. We need to talk about how that better way is. But we certainly have addressed the issue of making sure that we have wellness as a focus, not sickness. We have to deal with sickness, but what we really want is wellness. So we've worked very hard on that in this bill.
That was the Majority Leader of the House, Steny Hoyer. The President also kept leading the discussion back to areas of agreement during the course of the day. In this case, agreement that he heard with Senator Coburn. One note throughout the day, there's an audio buzz in the tape that we have of this meeting. We think it's caused by electronic devices in the room that ought to have been turned off and were not. Sometimes they drop a word or two, so just a word of warning there.
Senator Coburn mentioned some cost containment issues where it sounds like we agree. Fraud and abuse, we agree. It sounds like you have maybe one other idea that you don't think is in our proposal, but the idea of undercover patients, but that's something that I'd be very interested in exploring. I don't think conceptually that would be a problem. The issue of prevention, that includes, by the way, things like how our kids are eating and getting exercise, and I'm proud of the First Lady for working to see what she can do on that front. And there are some provisions in the legislation that's already been passed through the Senate and the House that directly relate to this that I think you'd be supportive of.
One of the principal ways of controlling medical costs, which is included in the health care bills produced in both the House and Senate, is the creation of what are loosely called association health plans. The opportunity for groups, say small businesses, to band together and negotiate for better insurance coverage and better rates. Democrats and Republicans have different versions of that idea. A Republican member from Minnesota, John Klein, talked about that.
I think that Senator Alexander framed our overall position very well when he said that we're looking at thousands of pages of legislation, and we believe a better approach is to go step by step to address these issues of cost. We certainly agree that you get better economies of scale if you can come together. We have proposed in both the House and the Senate, in fact, for a number of years, that small businesses be able to band together in small business health plans or association health plans. We all know, and I've heard everybody say here, that small businesses are the engine that drives our economy. We also know that about half of the uninsured either work for small businesses or depend upon somebody who does. And so we believe that we ought to address that issue by allowing these small businesses to band together in the same way that I think, Mr. President, you mentioned, large companies do. And I mean really the same way. Mm-hmm. So that they get all the advantages of, if they self-insure, being able to avoid the 50 state mandates, being able to lower their administrative costs because they're not having to deal with that. And it will lower the cost of premiums for these small businesses and allow them to insure more people.
Excuse me. NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner, let me just ask you a question sort of in the middle of this so we can get this out of the way. Could you explain insurance exchanges and give us some sense of what the difference in the details is, as the president described it?
Yes, and the details and the semantics here are actually very important. And this is, you know, it, sometimes it looks like there's more agreement than there is on some of these things. When the Republicans talk about association health plans, which is an idea that's been kicking around since the mid-1990s, this is actually something that was dreamed up by the National Federation of Independent Business. The idea of an association health plan is it would actually be sponsored by an association itself. In this case, the NFIB wanted to sponsor a health plan where they would let small businesses come together under the auspices of the NFIB or some other association.
NFIB.
The National Federation of Independent Business, which is an association that has members that are small businesses, or some other association. There had been tremendous problems with such types of plans in the past with a lot of fraud. So the Department of Labor had lots of concerns. State insurance commissioners had lots of concerns about these. Governors had concerns about these, which is why it passed the House a number of times, but never the Senate. Even when President Bush, who wanted to sign it, was in office, it had never gotten through both the House and the Senate to the president's desk. What the bills would do that have passed the House and the Senate now is they would have something called insurance exchanges. They would also let small businesses come together, but not under the auspices of an association, really under a bigger regulatory body that would have states involved and state regulators involved, and individuals could get into the exchanges, small businesses could get into the exchanges. Under the House bill, it would be possible that later on large businesses might be able to get in also. They would be able to pool their buying power and bring insurance premiums down. It would be a different, much different sort of mechanism than the association health plans, which were a whole different sort of pooling mechanism.
And the essential difference would be who's in charge.
Yes, and who regulates it.
Right. Now, whether and how to regulate insurance was the second topic up for discussion today, notably how insurance companies deal with people who have so-called pre-existing medical conditions. The House and Senate bill and the president's proposal say that no one can be rejected for insurance or dropped by their insurance company if they become ill or if they have a pre-existing condition. On the Republican side, Congressman Charles Bustani, who is also a physician, said the GOP would like to see these people handled by high-risk insurance pools to be set up by each state to cover people who have expensive conditions and cannot otherwise get coverage.
What we propose is using risk pools, expanding these risk pools, and reinsurance. It's an affordable way to do it. It creates certainty for a family that's faced with this very difficult set of circumstances. Certainty is important. And our plan would not raise premium costs extravagantly, whereas the proposal here would raise those costs. And it doesn't really create the kind of certainty a family needs because they're a waiting list, and that proposal is only temporary to something else that we don't know what it's going to be.
Congressman Bustani concluded by saying that he believes Congress has a duty to overhaul health care, but he said we have an obligation to get it right. Congressman George Miller, a Democrat from California, spoke out strongly for preventing insurance companies from discriminating against ill people or people with pre-existing conditions. Insurance public purchased through high-risk pools, he said, costs consumers too much.
What we're really talking about is the manipulation to move people around within the insurance market. And yes, you can go to a high-risk pool. So yes, because you have a pre-existing condition, because I have two artificial hips, I can go to the most expensive insurance system in the country. I'm now in a high-risk pool, and I'm trapped in that high-risk pool forever. You can make it a high-risk pool among states. You can make it a high-risk pool among small businesses. You can make it a high-risk pool among large businesses. I'm still trapped in the most expensive insurance because of something that happened to me that I had no control over.
The tone of the discussion during the day was mostly agreeable and dealt heavily with the complex issues raised by the healthcare debate. But there were moments when the exchanges turned to politics and process, as when former presidential candidate John McCain once again talked about starting over and had this exchange with the president.
When my constituents and Americans now who overwhelmingly reject this proposal say go back to the beginning, they want us to go back to the beginning. They want us not to do this kind of legislating. They want us to sit down together and do what's best for all Americans. not just for some people that live in Florida or happen to live in other favored states. They want a uniform treatment of all Americans. So I hope that that would be an argument for us to go through this 2,400-page document, remove all the special deals for the special interests and favored few, and treat all Americans the same under provisions of the law so that they will know that geography does not dictate what kind of health care they would receive. I thank you, Mr. President.
Let me just make this point, John, because we're not campaigning anymore. The election's over.
I'm reminded of that every day.
We can spend the remainder of the time with our respective talking points going back and forth. We were supposed to be talking about insurance. Obviously, I'm sure that Harry Reid and Chris Dodd and others who went through an exhaustive process through both the House and the Senate, with the most hearings, the most debates on the floor, the longest markup in 22 years on each and every one of these bills, would have a response for you. My concern is that if we do that, then we're essentially back on Fox News or MSNBC on the split screen just arguing back and forth. So my hope would be that we can just focus on the issues of how we actually get a bill done. And this would probably be a good time to turn it over to Secretary Sebelius. Who,
could I just say, Mr. President, the American people care about what we did and how we did it.
I think it's a subject that we should discuss. They absolutely do care about it, John. And I think that the way you characterized it obviously would get some strong objections from the other side. We can have a debate about process, or we can have a debate about how we're actually going to help the American people at this point. And I think that's the latter debate's the one that they care about a little bit more.
Now, that from that last exchange with Mr. McCain and the president was one of the sharper ones that we heard today in a series of discussions that was mostly fairly sort of soft and mostly thoughtful, as I think I just said. But I'd like to ask you folks something about that. Julie Rovner is here. We also have NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving and our White House correspondent Scott Horsley. What did you think about the general tone of this discussion? Did this work, do you think, in the way that the president talked about? Did it work for the Republicans?
I think it might have worked to some degree for both the president and the Republicans. I don't think that it fulfilled the dream that people would sit down, discover they had a lot of things in common, decide that they really wanted to serve the American people, and cobble together at least some sort of bipartisan deal by which we could go forward and have some legislation in the next couple of months. I don't know if that was ever realistic, but I think it did work as an opportunity for all parties to lay out their case in a certain way. The president certainly did that. Many of the Democrats did. Dick Durbin was particularly eloquent late in the day. And I think a number of the Republicans had just the opportunity they were hoping to have by not boycotting this event to make their salient points again and again. Let's start over. Let's find something that's more popular with the American people. Let's find something that doesn't excite people's fears.
It was often substantive and more detailed and more nuanced than a 30-second ad, but I think the president misspoke when he said, we're not campaigning anymore. The election is over. They are campaigning, and the election never ended.
Now, one of the things that they said throughout the day was that the Republicans kept saying the American people don't want this, and President Obama and others were saying the American people like this aspect of the plan and that aspect of the plan very much. Julie, what about polling? What do the American people want health care to pass in some form?
Well, yes. And the polls have been really quite remarkably similar over the last few months. They tend, the Republicans said over and over, and they're correct, that they don't like this bill. But as an entity, they don't like the bill that the Democrats have passed. But when you poll on individual pieces of the bill, the things that make up the bill, those remain strikingly popular. And a poll that came out just this week from the Kaiser Family Foundation said if there is no bill, if nothing happens, that 58% of those polled said they would be either disappointed or angry. So the idea of doing nothing should strike some fear into the hearts of the Democrats and perhaps some of the Republicans. You have to wonder if you know the voters could end up taking it out not just on those in the majority, but all incumbents.
Now, Scott, excuse me, one of the things that we heard and we'll hear again is that there's a major disagreement on whether coverage can be extended to people with pre-existing conditions, whether they can be dropped or not dropped. The Democrats' plans, all of the Democrats' plans, say that people cannot be dropped from insurance because of pre-existing conditions. They can't have their price jacked up because they have pre-existing conditions.
That's right, and this is something that the Republicans tend to favor as well. It's not a piece of the Republican proposal. It's not part of their platform. But when you talk to Republicans, they give lip service to saying, "Yeah, insurance companies shouldn't be allowed to deny sick people from getting coverage." That's a popular idea. The conservative Wall Street Journal columnist Peggy Noonan said, "Well, that's something that everyone agrees on." The problem is, if you're going to say to insurance companies, "You have to cover everyone," then you also have to say to individuals or businesses that you have to go out and buy insurance, because otherwise people will simply wait until they get sick to buy insurance. And that's why the step-by-step approach doesn't, in this case, work.
Thanks very much. That was NPR's Scott Horsley, our White House correspondent. Ron Helving and Julie Robner also here. I'm Linda Wertheimer, and this is a special report from NPR News. From NPR News, this is a special report. I'm Linda Wertheimer. We're spending this hour listening to a small part of a day-long conference President Obama convened today on health care, a kind of last-minute attempt to find agreement between Democrats and Republicans and pass a bill. We have some analysis from our editors, and we'll have our correspondents in a few minutes. But first, let's listen to some of the things that were said in the afternoon session. Throughout the day, Republicans called for scrapping the bills that had been passed by the House and the Senate and called for taking the issues on incrementally, what they called a step-by-step approach to dealing with health care. At various times, they referred to what they wanted as a blank slate or a clean piece of paper. At one point in the discussion, Republican Representative Peter Roskam of Illinois compared the GOP desire to a familiar toy.
Remember the old game you used to play as a kid, Etch-a-Sketch? And you'd start out with the Etch-a-Sketch, that little thing where you try and draw something and you dial the dials. And over a period of time, the more you dialed, the more crazy it looked. And then finally you'd say, "Oh, let's just go like that and do the Etch-a-Sketch." I'll tell you what, a year's worth of work and this is what has come up with. The American public, as far as the ones that I have heard from, are vehemently opposed to this. And they say, look, take the Etch-a-Sketch, go like this, let's start over, let's do incremental things.
Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa, a Democrat, said that he thought that the step-by-step, the incremental things approach would just not work.
Quite frankly, if we want insurance reforms, you can only do that if everybody's in the pool. You can only get everybody in the pool if you make it affordable for middle-class families and others. You can only make it affordable for middle-class families and others if you have cost controls. What I'm saying, Mr. President and others, is this all hangs together. You can't pick one out and do it without doing it all together. It all hangs together. Cases in point. Some states in the 90s tried to do health insurance reform without doing anything else. And they found it to be a debacle because the insurance premiums skyrocketed. New Hampshire, Kentucky, and Washington were forced to repeal their reforms because of that. Case in point, Massachusetts in the 90s put in health insurance reforms or anything else. Individual market premiums doubled. 4 years ago, when they did their comprehensive reform and they put the package together, premiums dropped by 40% in Massachusetts. That's why you can't do this incremental approach.
Another Democratic senator, Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia, strongly supported the idea that people with pre-existing conditions should not be treated differently from other people. Compelling insurance companies to treat people equally, Rockefeller said, will take a law.
The health insurance industry is the shark that swims just below the water. And you don't see that shark until you feel the teeth of that shark. Now, unless I be accused of trying to overdramatize my statement, this is the way they operate. Nobody has particular oversight of them. They're not under any antitrust type rules. They can do what they want. They so dominate the market, as the Secretary pointed out, that there really isn't any real competition. They can do what they want, and they do. And it's money. It's money. And it makes me sick. It shouldn't happen in America. People say, well, government run. You're going to do this or put that restriction on them. If you don't put the restriction on them, they're going to go on doing this. And so, you know, the public option was, I like that a lot, but that's not going to probably be possible. So you have to go at them to clip their wings in every way that you can.
Taking a different approach, Republican Congressman John Boehner of Ohio, the minority leader in the House, talked about cutting the cost of health care by regulating the size of the awards in medical malpractice lawsuits. And his comments led to an exchange with President Obama. Here's Mr. Boehner.
Mr. President, I told you the day after, maybe it was the day you were sworn in as president, that I would never say anything outside of the room that I wouldn't say inside the room. I've been patient. I've listened to the debate that's gone on here. But why can't we agree on those insurance reforms that we've talked about? Why can't we come to an agreement on purchasing across state lines? Why can't we do something about the biggest cost driver, which is medical malpractice and the defensive medicine that doctors practice? Let's start with a clean sheet of paper, and we can actually get somewhere, and we can get it into law here in the next several months.
John, you know, the challenge I have here, and this has happened periodically, is every so often we have a pretty good conversation trying to get on some specifics, and then we go back to, you know, the standard talking points that Democrats and Republicans have had for the last year. And that doesn't drive us to an agreement on issues. There's so many things that you just said that people on this side would profoundly disagree with. And I would have to say, you know, based on my analysis, just aren't true, that I think the conversation would start bogging down pretty quick. Now, we were trying to focus on the deficit issue. And the fact of the matter is, as we indicated before, that according to the Congressional Budget Office, this would reduce the deficit.
Reducing the deficit was one of the major topics of the afternoon meeting. The president argued that the health care legislation before the Congress and his own compromise version would reduce the deficit. Republicans and some conservative Democrats are not convinced, but one of the so-called Blue Dog Democrats spoke up for the president's plan. Representative Jim Cooper of Tennessee had a challenge for the doubters.
The deficit, in my opinion, is probably the most important single issue we face. Paul Ryan said it well. Health inflation is driving us off a cliff. And I'm kind of intrigued by the conversation because so far we've heard a lot of folks trying to outdo each other in deficit reduction. I welcome that competition, especially if it's backed up with votes. Because it's easy to talk tough on this. It's harder to deliver. I personally like Senator McCain's suggestion. Let's get rid of all the special deals. That's just a starting point. Paul Ryan is right again, and Tom Coburn is right when they point out that we're probably wasting a third of medical spending. Medicare alone is $37 trillion in the hole. And that means for all the folks who want to talk tough and not vote tough, that's not good enough. It means that for all the folks who want to do this next year or next decade or leave it to their successor, that's not good enough.
Congressman Henry Waxman of California hit back at Republicans, who said during the course of the discussion that the American people don't want the president's plan. Again, the audio from the discussion drops a word from time to time.
This bill is good for people on Medicare, and if we don't get this bill passed, they're going to get squeezed like crazy. This bill is good for the American working people. This bill is good for our health care system. And for us to take the Republican proposal, we'd cover, instead of 30 million people, 3 million. We wouldn't hold down the deficit a bit. We would still have all those pre-existing conditions that would keep people from getting their insurance coverage. Maybe if people go and pretend to be patients, we could stop some of those false claims. But I'm sure those false claims happen in the private insurance market, not just the public insurance market. But not only are we covering more people, we're doing innovative ways to deliver the care that will make it less costly.
Congressman Joe Barton, a Republican from Texas, returned to the underlying arguments Republicans made several times that the president's approach to health care represents a philosophical difference between the parties.
I do think, though, that there is a fundamental difference in the vision that you and your friends on the majority have put forward and the vision that myself and those of us in the minority have put forward. It's the fundamental role of government. We believe that we should use free markets to empower people and give them choices. And for the best of intentions, yourself and most of your allies in the Democratic Party seem to believe that the government, either through a mandate or through a regulatory requirement, knows better and will do better for health care for most Americans.
The discussion was meant to be over by 4 o'clock. It lasted until just after 5, which the president joked was pretty close for elected officials. Senior members of both parties wrapped up, and then the president summarized what he thought happened at the meeting. He congratulated participants for the extraordinarily civil tone of the meeting. He noted agreement on several issues, including some insurance regulation, but not so much agreement on other issues. Still, he thought some differences might be worked out, especially on curbing costs, and that other differences, he said, might not be possible to bridge.
What I'd like to propose is that I've put on the table now some things that I didn't come in here saying I supported, but that I was willing to work with potential Republican sponsors on. I'd like the Republicans to do a little soul searching and find out, are there some things that you'd be willing to embrace that get to this core problem of 30 million people without health insurance and dealing seriously with the pre-existing condition issue. I don't know, frankly, whether we can close that gap. And if we can't close that gap, then I suspect Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi and John Boehner are going to have a lot of arguments about procedures in Congress about moving forward. I will tell you this. That when I talk to the parents of children who don't have health care because they've got diabetes or they've got some chronic heart disease, when I talk to small business people who are laying people off because they just got their insurance premium, they don't want us to wait. They can't afford another 5 decades. And the truth of the matter is that politically speaking, there may not be any reason for Republicans to want to do anything. I mean, we can debate what our various constituencies think. I know that I don't need a poll to know that most of Republican voters are opposed to this bill and might be opposed to the kind of compromise we could craft. So it'd be very hard for you politically to do this. But I thought it was worthwhile for us to make this effort.
The president, excuse me, saying that he thought this effort was worthwhile. Now I'm joined by NPR's Julie Robner, Ron Elving, and Scott Horsley. Let me ask you all soul-searching, Republicans coming up with new ideas? Is that something that you expect to see, Julie Rovner?
No. I think this was a chance for Republicans to have a day on C-SPAN and perhaps some of the other cable news channels to make their case to the public about what their ideas are for the healthcare system, to perhaps, you know, cement with their base the things that they are not for, and perhaps bring along some others. You know, this was basically, I think, as Scott said earlier, some more electioneering, if you will, just not for elective office, for legislative victory on this health bill. I think the Republicans didn't come into this with any intent of trying to find common ground, and they didn't leave with any common ground found.
And I think it was an opportunity,
Scott,
in a sense, for the Republicans to sit on a more or less equal footing with the president and share their ideas, which is good for them. But it may also be good for the president and for the Democrats, because for the better part of a year, the Democrats' plan, and in the last week, the president's plan, have been up there like a piñata for the Republicans to whack at without really having to offer an alternative of their own in a major way, and or not in a way that the public was really widely aware of what Republicans' alternative was. So the White House has been saying, look, it's not a referendum on our plan. It's a choice. Is it our plan or their plan? And so this was a chance for the president to say, put your ideas on the table and let's debate those too.
Republicans feel that what they've been doing is working, and for good reason. This was a plan that at one time the president hoped and the Democrats hoped to pass last summer, and then maybe in the fall, certainly before the end of the year. Now we're virtually into March. We're talking about sometime in the spring, if ever. So the Republicans, who have been trying to hold this thing back and keep a comprehensive bill from passing, have managed to bring a substantial part of the public. There's a lot of polling data out there, but certainly many, many polls show over 50% of the people in the country aren't prepared for the bill, whatever they think it may be. And so what they've been doing up to now has been working pretty well, and today was a chance for them to essentially consolidate those gains and say, we think we should go back to square one. We think this whole thing can essentially be canned for the year.
There was a strong hint from the president that that they may move forward with this reconciliation process. He said the leaders will be discussing procedures about and ways of moving forward. Do you think that's going to happen, Julie? Do you think that the president is just going to lay down a marker and say, okay, let's have a vote on this thing?
I think that Congress was already getting ready to do that in any case. That was one of the reasons why the Republicans were so frantic leading up to this and even having sort of second thoughts about coming and calling this perhaps a setup and, you know, trying to insist that they begin with a blank piece of paper, that preparations are being made. They can only do this reconciliation process until the next year's budget resolution is passed. So really, they can't go beyond the spring. And so this would all have to be done really in the next 6 to 8 weeks. So time is running out and preparations are already underway for that, if it is to happen, given that the Senate Democrats no longer have 60 votes. They only have 59 votes. Having lost that seat in Massachusetts, this really is the only way it can happen, assuming there are not going to be any Republican votes. And it looks like there are likely not going to be any Republican votes.
And if they take that route, today's event gives the Democrats some political cover of saying we gave the Republicans every opportunity to have a seat at the table, many seats at the table, and to be a part of the process.
20-some seats at the table.
And while there is risk, of course, in going to reconciliation, it's an unusual procedure and hasn't been used on anything this big. Nonetheless, there are probably greater risks for the Democrats if they don't, because then essentially you're asking people to vote Democratic in November and saying, but we're not willing to use the tools that are available to us to pursue the president's program or the agenda the Democrats voted for in 2006 and 8.
You
know,
one of the things I think that that you do hear from citizens is that the Democrats have quite a few seats in the House and Senate. Even if they're concerned about what the next election may bring, even if they're concerned about losing one in Massachusetts, they still have a lot of votes, and why don't they vote?
This would be the conclusion you would come to just looking at the numbers and saying, are the Democrats prepared to be the majority party? If they have to use the reconciliation procedure and do it by simple majority, why are they not willing to do it?
So what, I mean, your verdict, Ron, is that probably the Republicans came off best in this event?
No, not necessarily, but I think that they got their licks in. They got their chance to get across what they wanted to say, and I think Scott is right. The president pretty much got what he could have expected out of this, a chance to contrast himself with those Republicans and show what he had.
And Julie?
I think both sides played to their bases, and I think, you know, to that extent, both sides did okay.
Scott?
Well, and I do think that part of this was also aimed not just at the bases, but at those independent voters who do want the appearance of bipartisanship, or at least an effort towards bipartisanship.
We've been talking with NPR's White House correspondent, Scott Horsley, with NPR health policy correspondent, Julie Rovner, and our senior Washington editor, Ron Elving. Thanks all of you for being here.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
This special report was directed by David Gura, edited by Stu Seidel and Joe Neal, and produced by Giselle Grayson with help from Rachel Lushinsky. Our sound engineer was Melissa Marquis. I'm Linda Wertheimer.